Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. We're going to talk about James playing so bad they had no choice but to put Fitzpatrick back in. Ty Lue getting the luckiest firing I can think of. And stories of you guys losing your significant others to famous people at clubs. But first, all right, so after the Browns lost to the Steelers, a lot of people kind of came away from that game feeling like somebody was going to have to be fired. On one level, you would have immediately thought that that one person would be Hugh Jackson, except, I mean, the mere fact that Hugh Jackson hadn't got fired thus far made you have no idea what it would take for him to get fired. Like, I didn't think he was going to survive this season. I thought he'd get to the end of it. I thought this would definitely be the end for him this year. But I wasn't so sure that that last game was going to get him fired. But then it reached a point where it seemed clear to everybody that either Todd Haley or Hugh Jackson was going to have to go because they could not work together. And then in the end, the owner decided, well, actually, all y'all got to go. Well, both of y'all got to go because Greg Williams got to stay. You may remember Greg Williams. He was the dude that was defensive coordinator of the Saints during that whole bounty thing. And I'll be honest, like, I understand that that wasn't cool, but I'm not, like, I'm not that mad at him about what went down with that one. I'm not on some you can never coach in the NFL again. But what I will never forget is Greg Williams looked one way, disappeared, came back, and looked like an entirely different person. Like, not just that he looked different, but the whole steez about it was different. Now, I need to be fair to Greg Williams on this one, right? I need to be fair. I attribute that to him trying to, like, flip his whole situation up after that previous thing. It is entirely possible that really all he did was meet a younger woman, right? Like, that was the level of steez flip up that he has. And you know how it goes when them cats about that age start meeting this younger woman. Generally speaking, or maybe this is only my life, so I don't want to necessarily project all of this onto the rest of you, but the stylistic evolutions that I tend to have are normally motivated by, you know, being in a serious relationship with a woman. But otherwise, I don't really care that much, right? Like, it's just not that big a deal. But you'll notice, right? Like, hey, I started wearing these different kind of shirts, right? In part because one day you come home and, you know, there's different shirts. Or maybe, you know, y'all don't date women that buy y'all shirts. I don't know. But, like, this is kind of how it goes. So maybe for Greg Williams, he was not just trying to shake off everything that had happened to him previously. Maybe what had happened was he just, you know, made some other changes in his life. Anyway, he looked like such a different person. He's Greg, G-R-E-G-G Williams, and I feel like he needed to start going by G-R-E-G. Like, if you're going to do the witness protection thing, man, you can't just come out here with the same name. I take it to another level. If Greg Williams would have decided after he had his makeover to start going by a totally different name, somebody would have had to put up the side-by-side pictures, and I'd be like, yeah, I mean, that kind of looks like Greg Williams, but, I mean, are you sure? You know, like, take it all the way.
Take the glasses off, do the frosted tips thing. Yeah. You've got going on.
Yeah, right? Take it all the way. Maybe he needed to, like, get a little work done. Like, not a lot. And just with what he had going right there, man, he could have been a totally different human. In fact, at some point, I need to look up, like, Greg Williams sitting, like, marriage situation. Because if he'd been married to the same woman for, like, 30 years, I am very curious what she thought. She was like, you're just not the man I married. All right? And you know what? Maybe that's a good thing. Not really sure. Anyway, back to the Browns and Hugh Jackson and the firing situation. I watched one episode of Hard Knocks. And the thing about Hard Knocks is, now they do it where it's like sorry teams. Like, they, nobody wants to do it, so you kind of can achieve your way out of doing Hard Knocks. And so the thing about doing Hard Knocks with a sorry team is, if they just got a, like, if they just got a new coach, okay, whatever. But if they got a coach that's been there in the course of them being sorry, then what you get a chance to witness is cats who are obviously, if they not angling for that job, they are angling for a job. And if we have learned anything about the hiring in professional sports recently, they are just like everybody else, and they are very susceptible to the allure of people being on television. And so if you get up there and you put up a dynamic performance on television, maybe it'll get you a job, or at least that's the way that people see it.
It's kind of like The Bachelor, where you have like the one girl, or you know, if it's The Bachelorette, the one guy that's clearly like doing too much to try and get his own spinoff.
Yes, there's always somebody when it's going to be there. Like I remember Brian Cox was kind of that dude when the Falcons were on there. Like he was going to make a star turn, man. This is the nature of what reality television does, and Hard Knocks is in effect reality television. But this year with the Browns, I mean, it was obvious. Todd Haley was gunning for this job. There was no question about it. He was gunning for this job. Greg Williams was definitely putting on a certain level of performance, but Todd Haley, he just got run out of there in Pittsburgh. He turns up in Cleveland. You got a coach that's won one game in the previous 2 years. I don't know if Todd Haley saw it in the way that I did, which was Hugh Jackson had no chance to survive this season because if Todd Haley came and resuscitated the offense, Hugh Jackson's job was to get the offense going. And so Todd Haley would ultimately get the credit for it and potentially get the head coaching job. You can go look at what happened in Tampa Bay with Dirk Cutter. That's how he wound up getting the job, right? The team got better. They attributed to the offense and the development of the quarterback, and then they hired the offensive coordinator to be the head coach. Hasn't worked out well, but, you know, that's what they did. It was right there for Todd Haley. Todd Haley did not come there to work for no damn Hugh Jackson. And if it was some of the reports all that we are receiving, he didn't have any interest in working for Hugh Jackson, right? He was over there to do his own thing. And you know what? I don't really have a problem with him thinking that he didn't work for Hugh Jackson, because from the stuff that I've been reading that football media has been putting out about this, apparently they didn't think he worked for Hugh Jackson neither. And the reason I say this is after that game where Hugh Jackson said that the offense was not playing well and that he is an offensive guy, that is his specialty, and therefore if he needs to be more hands-on with the offense, that is what he is going to do. Now, on one hand, I understand the argument that his offense was not necessarily that good when he was running it himself. I would make the other argument that Hugh Jackson made Andy Dalton look good, and he made like Jason Campbell look really good in Oakland. Like, the dude is not a fool when it comes to offense. He ain't perfect, but he ain't a fool. And if that's what you're hired to do, then that's the answer that you're supposed to give. Yeah, I'm the head coach, and if we need, you know, if I need to go in and do more, I'm going to evaluate it, and I'm going to see what it is that I can do. And people reported that as, Hugh Jackson says he's going to take the play calling away from Todd Haley. I didn't interpret that way at all when I saw it. That seemed like just the reasonable answer that a head coach would give. But apparently y'all ain't think that Todd Haley worked for Hugh Jackson either. Nope. Y'all didn't see that. It was an interesting turn on Hugh. You remember that offseason when the Browns wound up hiring him? We were putting him out there like a hot name for a coaching search, right? Like it was very clear. People really thought that Hugh Jackson should get a job. And, you know, part of the discussion around that was kind of compounded by like the struggles that black head coaches generally deal with. And so people who recognize the obstacles, of course, were in line to say, hey, you always say you ain't got nobody to hire. Here's somebody to hire. But anyway, people thought that this was a pretty good hire for Cleveland. Man, when they brought him back this year, that turn was swift, and everywhere people were just like, yo, get this cat out of here. Now, of course, that kind of happens when you win one game in 2 years. It is totally understandable. But then it gets to an extreme place where man says, yeah, I'm probably going to look a little bit more at the offense because I'm an offensive dude. And people look at it and they're like making a thing. You know, that's just kind of what happens. My dad talks about this, you know, I forget what song it was or the line. I think it's "You Lost That Love and Feeling," you know, and you criticize everything I say. Where you get to that point where people are just done and nothing you're going to say or be or do or whatever it is going to wind up being the thing that is correct. You know, like we call Hugh a fool for not starting Baker Mayfield. And I admit that in that first start I saw from Mayfield, I was like, ew, I'm kind of surprised he hadn't been playing before now. But, I mean, Mayfield's not bad, and I'm not calling him a bust or anything like that. But, I mean, I see that dude. He doesn't look like somebody who's ready to start. Like, I can see why somebody would think, no, I've got this guy who made the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago. I'm going to go ahead and play him. I get it. Like, I don't really think that that's that crazy or absurd of a thought. But I got no case for keeping that dude. I got none. That first team, that was 1-15 team. That second team was not an 0-16 team. It wasn't. There's no way around that. It was not. This team probably should be better than it has been in terms of wins and losses, right? Like, hey, when they decide you got to go in this situation, okay, boom, there it is. You got to go. I just find it hilarious that Todd Haley thought that he was going to play himself into a place where then the job would wind up being his, and now he had the crib also. Post it up. Chill it. And one thing I'm not really, like, that inclined to do. Like, it's hard to find somebody not really to root for in a situation, but if you got to pick a side between the dude that went 1-31 and the other dude is Todd Haley, like, there are no good choices here. The options that you have to select from, they're not fantastic. You would prefer to throw somebody else in there. Problem is, with the Browns, the only other thing there is for you to throw in there apparently is Greg Williams. And the arbiter of all of this is Jimmy Haslam. Like, I mean, have you seen this where people are talking about, you know, because of Baker Mayfield and all this, that Lincoln Riley would be somebody that Cleveland would try to hire? And I could totally see why Cleveland would think that hiring Lincoln Riley was a great idea. I don't know what the hell Lincoln Riley would be thinking going over there.
So did you catch the, like, Vegas odds for who's, like, up for this job?
I did not.
Oh, right. Okay, so at the top of it, Sean McVay.
What?
Sean McVay. And it got me thinking, so over the weekend, when Hugh was, you know, up doing his presser after the game, and someone asked him, like, oh, do you remember that timeout situation in the second quarter that you effed up or whatever? And he's like, honestly, I don't even recall that. And it just, like, the juxtaposition with, like, Sean McVay, who can remember, like, what he ate for breakfast in high school, you know, one, like, fall day, and he's number one. For the odds for the coaching position, it's like, I think I saw Mina Kimes tweet out, like, are the Browns making these odds?
Yeah, but I thought Sean McVay was smart.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why would you do this? Like, I understand that this roster has potential. They got assets, all of this stuff. They believe they have a franchise quarterback, and whether you take that job is entirely dependent on what you think Baker Mayfield is going to turn into in the NFL. Like, this isn't an Andrew Luck type of situation where everybody would want to work with him. You know, like, that's not it. Even if you think he's good, you would understand that this isn't a guy that's going to necessarily appeal to everybody. Why would you? No. No, like, if I have a good thing, there's no way, no matter what that good thing is, I don't leave a good thing to go to Cleveland. Like, that's the kind of thing you do because you gotta, you know? Like, Hugh Jackson, for example, he took the head coaching job that was being offered. It wasn't like that dude was sifting through all these offers and was like, you know what, Cleveland comes out on top. Nope, 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 nope. My understanding is, he took the job that was offered, and the big reason he took it was a smart one, which was he was the owner's hire, and he was, but then they switched out the front office. He ain't like the last front office either, but I don't think he got it. They brought in the new front office. First thing the new guy's going to want to do is get this 1-31 dude up out the paint. Like, no, no, no. Here's my question. Hugh Jackson hiring Todd Haley, and I don't know if it was his decision or not to do that. Is that a sign of, like, real, like, comfort and confidence? Or is that the most naive thing you ever could do? Because, you know, people don't like him at all. You know, like, they said that he was, dude, they said, I read a report that said that dude was walking into, like, draft evaluation meetings uninvited for the Browns. Uninvited. Unannounced. Just showing up and telling them who he wanted. Yeah.
Like, he was long for the place.
Yeah.
Who I want. I want to be tied to the future of this franchise.
No, and you got to remember that Haley's dad, I think he worked for the Steelers, but he was like somebody in an NFL front office. And that was the way that he got on, you know, getting into games. So it's not like we're talking about a dude who came up playing football and stuff like that. And he'd be out there talking crazy to people. You know, all of this, like, it was not hard to see that the Todd Haley thing was not going to work out. It was not difficult at all to see that that was not going to work out. If I'm not mistaken, T.O. hollered at him on the sideline one time. I think you remember the time T.O. went off on the receiver's coach?
I think so. Yeah, I think that might have been him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that was your man's, Todd Haley. look, man, this is just hilarious. And again, somebody's going to take the job because obviously there just aren't that many of them. Lincoln Riley, they asked him about it. He said he's not interested in that job right now. Because that's the kind of thing that you got to say to give your agent enough time to make that phone call to get you a raise. But I just can't see any way possible that him, at the age that he is, he's got a really good job. He's got a thing humming in that really good job. You need to post up because the Browns are a really bad job, right? No matter what the roster is, everything else is still the Browns, right? No matter what you think about what the football situation is, everything else is still the Browns. You believe in John Dorsey, that's fine. How long is John Dorsey necessarily going to be there? Because of things outside of him, not because he doesn't know what he's doing, but because of things that are outside of him. Why? Because they're the Browns, man. They are the Browns. That being said, I think Hugh Jackson probably wishes he was still coaching them, getting fired. It's kind of embarrassing.
Isn't it sad that the Browns had like one day this entire season where they didn't feel like the Browns? I think it was that like, was it that Thursday night game?
The Thursday night game, and then they won another game.
But there was that one night where it was like Baker came out. Everybody's like, oh, we're not the Browns anymore. Like, we have a future.
Yeah, and that was the first win they'd had in, like, goodness knows how long.
The free beer for America thing. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, let me let you know this. This is best good interesting factoid to roll out on. Joe Posnanski wrote this, saw this in something he wrote for The Athletic. Since the Browns came back, there has not been a season where they did not change either the head coach, the general manager, or one of the coordinators. That's over 20 years. Yeah. All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about the craziness in Tampa. But first, these days you can get practically everything on demand. Like the right time. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. But did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk when it's convenient for you. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package using your own printer. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. With how easy it is, I don't really get why everyone doesn't do it already. Look, Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale so you can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage. Here at the right time, when we need to send you your Unblock Me t-shirts, Gabe doesn't even have to leave his house to get you squared away using Stamps.com, and you can do the same. Right now, use BOMANI for this special offer. It's a 4-week trial, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BOMANI. That's Stamps.com. Enter BOMANI. Jameis had one of them games that make you wonder if that dude was broken. He looked so bad against the Bengals that, like, when the decision was made to take him out of the game, I turned over because like, I was watching on Sunday Ticket, but I got to do the Sunday Ticket on stream. You know, it's a long story, but that gives you a little bit of a delay. So I'd known what had happened. So I was like, gee, I wonder if, and I walked over that bad boy. I turned over that bad boy, and all I saw was Dirk Cutter, who I couldn't pick out of a lineup otherwise. But as he walked up to Ryan Fitzpatrick, it was like, you got it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of what it has to be. And so I watched the game as it goes on, and it was kind of interesting because Fitzpatrick put up big numbers. The biggest number came from that 72-yard pass to Mike Evans, and you can't ever knock a man for a pass that he actually completes. But I feel like any of us could have completed that pass. The problem is, I'm not sure that at that point, Jameis would have completed that pass. Like, there's no question that they had to put him on the oak, and it totally makes sense that he is not going to play next week, that Fitzpatrick is going to wind up getting the start. Like, that dude gave them no other options. You know, one thing I done figured out about this world, man, at least as it relates to me and this year's sports coverage, is a whole lot of y'all sit around and wait for the day that I'm wrong about something so you can get me to bow down about being wrong. Like, I've come to understand that this is just how y'all get down. And you have to, like, from my perspective, I'm not going to knock you for it. I just personally, I wasn't raised to be a hater, so I just don't have an ability to understand what it is about you that makes you that way, right? But I'm willing to indulge you to an extent because I was raised to be a nice guy. What can I say? When it was time to start Jameis, it was time to start Jameis. Like, there's no question about that. The best argument for starting Ryan Fitzpatrick was that Ryan Fitzpatrick had the hot hand. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw, was it 4 interceptions in 5, over 5 quarters or something like that? And it was just like, oh, okay, cool. So this Fitzpatrick thing went the way that it typically goes. They brought Jameis in. They went and Gade had a run. He had like a decent game in that one against Atlanta. But man, that dude gives the ball away. And he gets back there and you look in his eyes. And for someone who is roundly considered to be like smart football, but like smart about this stuff, he makes the horriblest decisions. And it's an interesting thing about him because in spite of all the things that surround him, in a way, Jameis managed to shake off like your typical standard black quarterback knocks. Like people will talk about him being terrible at this point, but you don't hear people coming out here with the he can't read defenses stuff. In spite of the fact that he consistently throws the ball to the other team, like this is actually a bit of magic that he's managed to pull this off in terms of the way that he is perceived. But the thing is, he was throwing passes right at defensive backs, right? Like he has a general accuracy problem, but this was not a matter of being inaccurate. This was a matter of throwing the ball right to the defense. Like, son, is something wrong? Do you have some things on your mind? Is this contract year being a little bit too much for you? Because he looked the worstest when he was out there. But I don't know what exactly Tampa Bay is supposed to do. The reason that I say that is, again, we know how this goes with Fitzpatrick. He'll ride a hot streak for you. And then he'll wind up, you know, coming crashing to earth. But the thing is, the hot streak itself is not promised. You understand what I mean? Like, he can give you a hot streak. And then after the hot streak, it's going to fall apart. If you get the hot streak in the first place. So let's throw this out here just purely as a hypothetical. Let's say next week, Fitzpatrick comes out there and he throws two interceptions in the first half, right? Now, for me, of course, you play him for the rest of the game. Like, I mean, you made the decision he's going to be the guy that starts. You ride it out for the rest of the game. But let's say he throws two interceptions in the first half. You come out of that game and it's like Fitzpatrick threw for, you know, some bazillion yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. That is an improvement over what you have been getting. But if that keeps up, are you at a place where you are going to say that Jameis is his worst game? Because that is one like dangerous thing that I think has happened at this point. And this happens to a lot of quarterbacks where you have a bad run and suddenly that becomes the definition of what kind of quarterback you are. Tyrod Taylor, I think had this happen to him in Cleveland when I think it was pretty clear that he was playing hurt in some measure. He had that really bad first half in the Browns game that we were talking about, the one that the Browns won and Baker came in and they were talking about the future and everything else. Go ask people about Tyrod Taylor and they're going to define him by those four games. Like that's going to be the way that they see him from here on out. That seems silly, right? Because let me tell you who apparently has not been defined by his worst four games. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah, you hadn't thought about it like that, had you? Right, yeah, okay. But the Bucs still have some measure of decision to make because I would not believe that the quarterback that you saw in Cincinnati is your quarterback. Now, what your quarterback is turnover prone. And you have to ask yourself, what is the ceiling of the other things that he can provide as he is turnover prone? Fumbles included, right? Like he is that. What's the ceiling for that? And do they have a star quarterback? No. And so unless something drastic changes, do they have a star quarterback? I'm going to say no. Do they have a quarterback who can easily be replaced, right? Not necessarily at this moment, because obviously Ryan Fitzpatrick. But if you're talking about the quarterback that you're going to have for the contract, how easy is it for you to go find another quarterback, like the guy that can do that? I don't really have an answer for that. Like, Gabe, can you think about how many quarterbacks are just laying around, like they're in the NFL but not starting, that might be a guy. Anybody, like, the one guy I can think of is Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, if there was a guy, wouldn't you think that John Gruden would probably be trying to get him on his roster so he yes. can get rid of Derek Carr?
Yes, and so he doesn't have to take a rookie?
Yeah.
Right, yes. Who's the other one? Oh, Teddy Bridgewater is there for someone.
He's on the Saints.
Yeah, he's there, and his contract, it's only a one-year contract
yeah.
that he's on. So he's there for somebody to take. My guess is that the Saints were like, okay, we get him, he's a backup, and if we lose him in free agency, I imagine they get a compensatory pick based on money, and they're thinking somebody's going to pay a halfway decent chunk of change in order to get him. Maybe that's my guess, but the game of going and getting another quarterback is tricky. And this is not a good year to draft a quarterback. Like, other than Herbert, the only two names I've heard when people talk about quarterbacks, and of course the way this process goes, we're going to find out about more guys later. Like, if you had asked me this question 2 years ago, I never would have mentioned Patrick Mahomes, for example, right? So there's going to be somebody that comes up. Carson Wentz would be another guy that if we were talking at this part of the process, we weren't really talking so much about them. So maybe there's somebody out there, but is there somebody out there that Tampa's like, yo, I can plug this dude in with the receivers that we have, the options that we got, and we can go make this happen? Is there that guy? I don't know. So if Fitzpatrick comes out here and does not play well, which is a possibility. Like, if he comes out and he plays well, then that answers itself. But if he comes out here and he does not play well, at what point do you go back to Jameis? Because I also am not convinced that the dudes on the team are that excited about the idea of coming back to Jameis. No, honestly, let me tell you what might be the biggest indictment that Tampa has shown toward Jameis. Now, keep in mind, it was only a couple weeks ago that Dirk Cutter was talking about Jameis going to be here longer than I am. They were in on this not that long ago. But the fact that it came down to that last play against the Falcons, and rather than run a play to try to throw the ball into the end zone, they ran that crazy thing where Jameis ran into somebody and then tried to lateral it to Mike Evans, who was supposed to try to get it to DeSean Jackson. And oh, by the way, to throw to Mike Evans wasn't accurate.
That's the word I was thinking of, indictment.
Yeah.
Just the most damning indictment that he's not your guy. Like, I mean, if you have, I guess it was Ryan Fitzpatrick was wearing DeSean Jackson's chain, but if you have that going on and they're not backing Jameis, then that tells you all you need to know.
But look, also, like, the question becomes, at what point do you give up on a quarterback? Like, that's what it becomes. So, you know, in the year 2015, I became kind of famous for, like, Kirk Cousins stuff, right? I raised some questions that I thought were very salient at the time. Cousins has turned out to be a lot better than I thought he was then. But at that time, Cousins was throwing two interceptions every other week, right? Like, you can go back and look at the timing of when I wrote that, did that thing with the Washington Post. He was throwing two interceptions every other week in the middle of his fourth year. So he was basically in this same place that Jameis is in right now. Now, the argument that you can make on the other side, obviously, is that Cousins didn't get to play as much. However, Cousins absolutely had a time where he had that starting job, and he lost it to Colt McCoy. Like, you can go back and look at that. So Cousins is now in seventh year in the league. He has turned into what he is now, right? And that's a quarterback that somebody paid, what, $27 million a year in order to get. At what point do you decide to bail on something like this? Now, of course, this also comes with one, you know, complicating factor. Jameis does things, right? Like, this for me often becomes a gray space, because I understand why many people believe that he committed a sexual assault in Tallahassee. I have not been presented. The evidence that I have seen of that does not leave me convinced. It sure as hell doesn't leave me at a place where I say he did not do it, but I'm not in a place where I can operate on the presumption that he did. Like, that's always been my feeling on that particular incident. But the Uber thing was ridiculous. Like, there's no way around it, right? Like, he behaves in a problematic fashion, or at the very least, he has behaved in a problematic fashion. Right. And so everything you talk about him as a football player then gets compounded by what the other stuff is. And so if somebody tells me that they're going to make the call on Jameis, where they're like, nah, I'm not doing this because he's not that good and I can't trust him. Got you. I can see that. The thing is, it doesn't sound like NFL teams are worried about that. Like, whether they should or should not be is his own discussion. But I don't get the feeling that, like, the Bucks, for example, are that worried about that. Like, that doesn't seem to be part of the calculus for them. It doesn't seem to even really be that much of the frustration, at least from their local fans. Like, that doesn't seem to be it. They're just like, yo, man, this dude is not throwing the ball to people. So when I talk about him, I want to be clear. I do not discount the other stuff that comes with Jameis. But when I, like, analyze it and look at, like, what it is for these squads, I just don't think they put it in their math. I just don't think that this is something that really makes the full all make or break. Like, there'll be some teams at some point if he's out there that won't know what to do, but I don't think that is coming up in that way about him. It's just a matter of whether or not he can play football. And yeah, I just don't think that the worst of him is necessarily what he is. I am now, though, convinced that the best of him will only be but so good. Like, we thought this is a guy that could potentially be a perennial Pro Bowl quarterback. This ain't that. Unless something drastic changes, this is not that. Like, this is, like, there's a lot of Jay Cutler with a not as strong arm here. And I think Jay Cutler was better than people gave him credit for, but that's not the comparison that you want to have. That's like if you're a baseball player, people compare you to Dave Kingman. Like, that is not the thing that you want to be. But let me tell you something about Jay Cutler. If you saw a team give up stuff to get them and spend money to keep them, that everybody understood, because there just aren't that many good quarterbacks out there. How long does Tampa Bay think it might take for Jameis Winston to be a good quarterback? Let me tell you, my guess, because I heard the thing about, you know, if his option for next year is only guaranteed for injury, it's not guaranteed for skill. So if he fails a physical at some point, that money becomes guaranteed. So that's the argument, basically, the Robert Griffin argument for putting him in bubble wrap and not playing him this year. If I had to guess, if the general manager doesn't get fired, and Jameis is going to get that option next year. If it doesn't work for them next year, maybe they draft a quarterback, or maybe they put the option on him, try to take a quarterback at, you know, at some point fairly early in the draft and hope you got a guy that can beat him out like they did with Josh Freeman when Asciano was there. Like, maybe that's the play that they make. But Jameis is probably going to be the starting quarterback again. Go ahead and make peace with it, right? Go ahead and make peace, because it ain't going to be so much a right or wrong issue. It's just that Fitzpatrick ain't going to stop being the dude that he is. Now, I will say this. If Fitzpatrick comes out here and has like a run, and the run, you know, the run doesn't stop, yeah, he'll wind up keeping the job. I just don't see why anybody would bet on such a thing happening. But hell, I wouldn't bet on Jameis either. So I tell you, ain't nothing easy about this one. Cleveland Cavaliers fired Ty Lue. And, I mean, Gabe, how happy would you be if you were Ty Lue?
I would be over the moon. I would be absolutely over the moon. I mean, getting a $15 million payout and being told you don't have to hang around a sinking ship anymore.
Look, man, don't forget he had to leave the team last year for health and stuff, just off stress.
I know. Right? People forget about that.
And that's stress. Like, I understand that there's some unique pressures that come when LeBron is in your orbit, but that's still stress with LeBron. You imagine the stress without LeBron and Kevin Love about to miss a month? Like, I feel so dumb. I looked at the team, and I was like, and I looked at the East, I was like, yeah, you know, I still think this is a team that could win 30, 40 games. Yo, they are so bad. Like, I gave way too much credit to the idea that some of these other guys would have some bigger roles and they could still, like, make something happen. They stink. Like, if I'm Ty Lue and you're like, they're like, hey, you think you can show up to work a little bit early tomorrow? I would love to. Dan, what you want to talk about? Well, we're going to go in another direction. Say no more. No, I don't need no explanation. In fact, my stuff is already in a box. Like, I'm ready to go. Like, I go shake hands with all the players. Like, I'd have no problem showing up, because I would have absolutely no beef. You're going to give me my $15 million, and I ain't got to put up with none of this, and I can just go kick it in L.A. or something like that? Psh, bro, you must be, oh, yeah, I can't wait. I'd be out. I mean, damn. Think about this. Larry Drew, they want Larry Drew to be the interim coach, and Larry Drew is like, uh-uh, no, sir. Larry Drew says he will not be the interim coach. He says he is the acting coach. He says he is the voice. He says he recognizes that he is, in fact, the substitute teacher, and that if they want him to actually coach the team, they go need to give him some long run assurance, and I don't blame him in the least. I understand standard practice in the NBA is you make the lead assistant the interim coach, you give him a little bit of a pay raise, and then you make your play from there. But Larry Drew ain't stupid. You know them dudes ain't going to listen to him if he not actually the coach.
Oh, man, he's been the interim coach way too many times.
And no. He knows that these cats are not going to listen to him. And so if they're not going to listen to him, he's not going to do it. Like, do you remember when Bernie Bickerstaff was the interim coach after they fired Mike Brown in L.A.? Bernie Bickerstaff, because that team had Kobe and those dudes on it. Man, Bernie Bickerstaff didn't even try. He knew what the deal was. He's like, I ain't here to actually coach this team. And so he did not actually coach this team. By the way, with him not coaching, that was the best that team was that year. But nah. He ain't. He ain't doing it. I find that to be hilarious. He's just 100%, I am not doing this. So think of how bad that team is going to be. And on top of thinking about how bad that team is going to be, this is where you got to remember and you got to give those props to Kyrie for being like, no, I want no parts of this. I'm out. Kyrie signed that extension in Cleveland and it was going to be his team, right? He wanted it to be his team. And then LeBron showed up. And so, you know, I totally understand everything that came from that. He decided to get out of there because he wanted to be in a situation that was like his team, you know, that was more his. And I have absolutely no problem with that. I understand where he's coming from completely. But I do think it's kind of funny that we give him credit for getting out in front of the disaster that was obvious that Cleveland was going to become. However, that's what it would have been if LeBron had never showed up in the first place. You see what I'm saying? Like, if LeBron had never come there, he would be in a disaster like this because he'd been in a disaster before when it was Kyrie and Deion Waiters and all of this. Like, I always gave this to Kyrie. Kyrie knew about something that LeBron didn't, which is what it's like to play in Cleveland when LeBron isn't there. That sounded like a real good idea to him when he was like 23. He was like, there's no way in the world I'm doing this now as a grown man. And so he's up there in Boston. They're still trying to figure that out. That comes with its own questions. But Ty Lue is like, y'all can have this, bruh. No thanks. I got a ring, right? So, like, having that ring sets him up in a situation where if he does want to coach again, you got to pay him big money. Go look at the money somebody had to pay Scott Brooks just because of what Scott Brooks did when he was with the Thunder. Well, none of us think that Scott Brooks can coach worth a damn. Like, this is the biggest win in the world. At one level, I was like, I don't see why Ty Lue didn't just resign after LeBron left. And then I realized, Gabe, he resigned after LeBron left. He wouldn't get his money. All he had to do was waste six games, and now he gets every dime.
Yeah, he got an extension last year.
Yeah, he got every dime. Every dime. That is, I mean, I imagine those six games that he had to deal with were not necessarily that pleasant. But I feel like we do need to give this man a measure of credit for that finesse. I bet he doesn't coach again. He's like, yo, this ain't fun. But he made more money coaching than he ever did playing. Finesse. I salute you, Mr. Lou. All right, we'll be back in a minute with If You Haven't Heard. But first, you know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them before you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. No more sorting through the resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and that rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Tech.
Hello, my name is Anthony Cuthbertson and I am the Deputy Technology Editor for The Independent in London. I recently covered a story about a new cyborg craze in Sweden whereby thousands of people have been having chips inserted beneath their skin in order to make their daily lives easier. These chips are about the size of a grain of rice and they're implanted between the thumb and forefinger of either the left or right hand. The chips contain radio frequency identification technology, or RFID, which is found in credit cards and passports and most modern key cards used to get into hotels. The chips can be read by any device that supports near-field communication, or NFC, meaning most modern Android smartphones can recognize them. They don't contain a battery, so they don't need to be recharged. But if you want to replace them, then you have to undergo minor surgery. The idea is that they negate the need for things like physical cards or passcodes or signatures, potentially allowing for more efficient and frictionless transactions at checkouts and international borders and other travel terminals. The Swedish company behind this latest trend, Biohacks, say that they've installed more than 4,000 devices in the 5 years since they launched. Biohacks has also partnered with the Swedish National Railway System so that anybody wearing these chips can actually replace their paper tickets or plastic travel cards in order to travel on journeys. There are, of course, obvious privacy concerns, with some people worried that having these chips embedded beneath their skin make them easier to track. However, the people that actually have them embedded generally think that the risk of having their passcodes or other information stolen is no greater than having your credit card stolen from your wallet or your keys picked from your pocket. Since writing the story, I've had several people contact me about their experiences with these chips. One person in America that I spoke to said that he had 6 of these chips embedded in various parts of his body. Each of them perform a different function. One of them, for example, would be used as a Bitcoin wallet. I'm not sure why this craze has taken off in Sweden particularly, but another place where this trend has taken off is in California, which makes a lot more sense given the high concentration of technology companies in the area. It'll be interesting to see where this trend goes from here, and who knows, it might not be long before you and I have these chips embedded inside our hands.
It will be long, because I'm not doing that, dog. Hey, man. I don't know how many people we got listening in Sweden, but, you know, maybe it's too late for them. But those of y'all over here, man, we going to wind up being slaves of these robots because y'all are lazy. You too damn lazy to reach in your pocket and get your card? You too lazy to use Apple or Samsung Pay or Google Pay? You too, you going to, no, I don't need that, right? Like, you know, I remember when the check card came out. Gabe, you probably don't remember a world without the check card. But the check card, we ain't always have the check card. The check card was an amazing level of convenience because now you didn't have to write checks, right? Like, you did not have to carry this cash and you could just run your card. It was a beautiful thing when it happened. And you know what? Every advancement since the check card has been kind of cool, but absolutely unnecessary. Absolutely unnecessary. Y'all out here getting chips in your bodies. For what? You lazy bums.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the next level of, you know, ease of use and privacy, where you have the people who want to put, like, tape over their camera on their phone because they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to be getting observed or whatever. They don't want to be getting hacked. So these people don't, I guess they don't feel like they want to use Apple Pay on their phone because they don't want to get hacked, but then they still want the ease of use of just being able to swipe and not having their wallet.
How you gonna trust a person who decided that the way to make money was to put a microchip in your skin? Yeah. Does that sound like a person you can trust?
Yeah, I may have to do some reporting of this on my own and come back to you on it, because my wife's dad actually works for the Swedish railway system. And so it'll be interesting to talk to him about it and kind of give you some inside info on how it actually works.
Well, if he hasn't already given up, tell him to stand tall against our technological overlords. They're under siege over there.
This second story also comes from tech.
Hello, my name is Paresh Dave, and I'm a technology correspondent for Reuters based in San Francisco. So last week, the Italian government fined both Apple and Samsung 5 million euros, or about $5.7 million each, for basically using software updates to slow down their phones. Apple said it didn't issue these software updates to intentionally slow down phones, but it had the effect on these old phones with aging batteries of slowing down the performance of them. Apple said in the future it would be more clear and upfront about it, and last year it reduced the cost to replace a battery. All that was really well known. What hadn't been known as much was that Samsung was doing something similar with the Galaxy Note 4. Back in 2014, it issued an update for the Android operating system that led to all these malfunctions like automatic restarts, really slow performance. Samsung said it didn't do anything that reduced the performance of the Galaxy Note 4 and that it would appeal the fine and decision from the Italian government. Still, the Italian government said that it did a months-long review of customer service records, internal emails from Samsung, and it was clear that this Android update was not optimized for the device. So all of this raises interesting questions about the kind of information and warnings and disclaimers that Apple and Samsung put in software updates for their phones.
I just want to say this because, you know, that's good stuff to know and everything, right? But when this happened to government, you know, they fined them folks. How about we get some, like, refunds, right? Can we get some rebates? Like, I appreciate you putting it in on the society, but can we individually get some rebates? Wouldn't a rebate be better? I would like a rebate.
I mean, that's what they were kind of, like, halfway doing after Apple. I feel like they got caught with their hands in the cookie jar trying to do that last year here in the U.S. I think what Paresh alluded to earlier, too, was they reduce the cost of the battery, and they're like, oh yeah, we're sorry about that, it's more related to the battery, you know, we'll give you a free battery, or we'll give you like a cheap battery, when really they're, I mean, it's so clear what they're doing. And meanwhile, I'm still rocking my iPhone 4.
I want cash. Wow, iPhone 4.
Yeah,
that sounds heavy.
Yeah, well, no, it's the opposite of heavy, actually.
Really?
It's very small. It's like one half the size of everyone else's iPhone.
So when's the last time you did a software update?
I actually do my software update pretty often. The unfortunate part, though, is that I have to charge my phone like 3 times a day because my battery is just absolutely fried.
Now, are you just being cheap and just refuse to get a new phone?
Well, I think part of it is being cheap, but also part of it is the size of it. The iPhones these days are so big. And I'm not as tall and large of a person as you are, Bomani.
No, that's fair. I'm with you. Large, that's funny. I just got big hands.
It's interesting that all this is kind of happening a year after the fact in Italy, here last year, and Apple's still trying to get away with it, but now they're trying to get away with it other places too.
Yeah, they're like, okay, y'all got us, but don't tell nobody, okay? We can keep this between us.
Like, there's just no sort of like international communication that goes on where people can't just Google, like, Apple iPhone software update trying to screw us over. Oh, that happened last year. Oh, well, I guess we can try and take some legal action.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, Bo, this last story comes from business.
My name's Amanda Coletta, and I cover Canada as a freelance journalist for The Washington Post. My story is about the hundreds of workers who are leaving much-coveted and relatively stable careers in traditional sectors of the economy for new roles in an uncertain, fast-moving industry in Canada, cannabis. Medical marijuana has been legal in Canada since 2001, but on October the 17th, Canada ended a 95-year-long prohibition on the recreational use of the drug. With pot legalized, the number of job vacancies in what analysts say could be a multi-billion dollar industry has surged. It's not just the growing number of jobs in the space that's fueling the migration. Experts say that the chance to join cannabis firms with sky-high valuations, as well as the opportunity to shape an industry where Canada has really leapfrogged right over the United States and could emerge as a world leader, make the sector attractive. Many of the employees that I spoke to said that they view joining the industry as a chance to be a part of history. The jobs on offer run the gamut from bud tender, that's the person behind the counter at a cannabis dispensary who helps you to select your product, to quality assurance specialist, which is exactly what it sounds like. One Toronto-based company raised eyebrows a few weeks ago when it put out a job posting for 5 quote-unquote cannabis connoisseurs. Their job will be to sample various strains of marijuana and to report back on the quality, It pays $50 an hour for 16 hours of work per month on top of a $200 expense account. More than 20,000 people applied for it. Despite the increased interest in the sector, there are still some snags. One of them is that since the cannabis industry doesn't really have a true analog, filling some of the positions, particularly on the cultivation side, has been difficult. Growing cannabis isn't like growing tomatoes, is how one cannabis executive explained that problem. Another issue is that there's still some lingering stigma associated with working in the marijuana industry, and others worry that working in the cannabis sector could present them with issues with border agents when traveling.
So, one, I would note that working in the weed game now is the new I'm going to start a record label. Right? Everybody going to do it. Everybody's just like, yo, I'm just going to find me a way to get into this. But Gabe, did that woman just say that they had a job that was paying, you say, $20 an hour for people to just go smoke weed?
Well, to be a connoisseur.
Yeah.
So how do you define connoisseur? Because I'm sure a lot of people would like to consider themselves to be connoisseurs.
Well, I would also say that there's, all right, so here would be the dilemma on that one. And it becomes, again, an interesting shift here, because the person that would be most qualified for that job, and I guess I don't know how exactly you demonstrate your capability, right? I don't know if it's a quiz.
How do you list that on your resume?
Yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah, like I don't know exactly how it is they decide who the true connoisseurs are, right? But to be a connoisseur, I would assume that requires you to smoke a lot of weed, right? Which heretofore has not necessarily been the most attractive thing to employers, right? So like, how do you find this careful balance of someone that has the experiential knowledge that you need, but is also somebody that you want to hire? This does remind me of the time that one of my buddies took a drug test for a job at a bank, and he failed a drug test, and he walked into GNC because he had bought some kind of system flush. And he walked in and he asked for his money back because he did not pass the drug test, and they did not give him his money back, but he did walk out with the job.
Wow.
Yeah. Impressive, right?
Yeah.
Like he managed to make that situation work. But now you got all kinds of people just like, you know, I just think, the cannabis industry is a growing thing. And I just think I could probably I could, and then parentheses, I also used to sell weed.
Yeah, and then you have like 20,000 people apply to the same job, and you got, the HR people just looking at YouTube videos of dudes blowing smoke rings.
Yeah, I will say this, though. They talk about there is no analog to the cannabis industry. Well, there kind of is. People selling weed. Like, I understand that there's not, that this is more institutionalized than everything else. They're like on the cultivation side. I'm like, nah, I don't think that's as hard to find as you think it is. You just must not be looking in the right places.
Yeah, it's like, I think there's an app for that.
Yeah, look a little harder. Trust me.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So we put out for stories of that one time that a celebrity tried to steal your girl. And we got some good ones. This first one comes from Jeff in Alabama.
Bo, this is Jeff in Alabama. My wife and I are big Bama fans. We're in Birmingham for the Magic City Classic. I get invited to a bar by a guy who knows a bunch of ex-Alabama football players. He tells us all drinks are on the house, so y'all come hang out, have a good time, which we do. And then he tells us the guy who owns the bar is Marcel Darius. I'm like, okay, cool. Marcel Darius shows up. The guy I know comes and gets me. He tells me, hey, Marcel Darius is here. If you want to meet him, get a picture. I'll tell him, and he'll do it. I tell him taking a picture with a player, not my thing, but that's one of my wife's favorite players, so she says she'll take a picture. I get the smartphone. Marcel Darius walks up, takes a picture with my wife, and then he sits there and says to her, well, hey, how you doing? I'm Marcel Darius. She introduces herself, and then he says, well, what are you doing later on? Maybe we can get together. And she says, no, I'm married. I'm happily married. He doesn't know I'm the guy holding the phone. And he proceeds, after she shoots him down, to tell everybody in the bar, y'all gotta go. Everybody go home. Party's over. He literally shuts the bar down, jumps in his car, makes a U-turn in the middle of traffic, and takes off. And the guy who invited us to the party looks at me and says, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but your wife just turned down a guy who just signed a $100 million contract. He said, you're all right with me. But oddly enough, we never got invited to another one of his functions. Anyhow, that's my story, Bo.
Dang.
I think this is one of those stories that Marcel Darius hopes that no one ever saw or heard.
Yeah, I bet he don't tell the story.
Bolted out of there and peeled down the street. The funny part about it, too, is him trying to treat a bar as if it's like a house party. Yes. Like, oh, no, we got to shut this down. Everybody go home. It's like, what do you mean going home? Yes. This place is open for business right now.
She told everybody to leave.
Oh, man. All right. Story number two comes from John in Austin.
Hey, Bo. This is John from Austin, Texas. I just had to get on here and share my story about my experience with celebrity coming after my date. This was probably about, let's say, almost, yeah, 6 years ago, probably 7 years ago. This is when Donald Glover was just blowing up, really. And at the time, he was on tour, and half the tour was stand-up, and half the tour was him doing his music. So the first half of the show, you know, it was great. Great performance. Everything was going well. And, you know, I had this girl who I just started dating. It's a barista. She worked close to where I worked at the bank. And I've been, you know, trying to talk to her for the longest time. Finally got some tickets to the show. She wasn't even sure who this guy was at this point. But I'm like, oh, no, you'll enjoy it. It's great. He's a great performer. He's hilarious, too. So we go out to the show. Amazing performance. Stand-up was good. The music was good. And then after the show, you know, my girl who I was with, she'd been to the House of Blues in Houston, you know, a few times before. And she's like, oh, if you go around back, sometimes the buses are out there, and they, you know, some artists will come out. And it's like, okay, I have time. So I'm just enjoying myself with her. We go out to the back, waiting on the buses. We wait for probably about 20 minutes, and he comes out. And I got to tell you, this is one of the coolest celebrities that I've ever met in person. Like, he's, like, actually taking the time. He's talking to everybody. He's staring everybody in the eyes. You know, I talk to him for a second because I'm a comic myself. And, you know, he signs my ticket, says, yeah, man, just keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, yeah. Next thing, as soon as he's done talking to me, he turns and makes direct eye contact with my girl. And she is just, I can just tell that she's almost in love. And this gaze, just like, there's no way you can win this. There was no possible way. And I just look at him, and I look at her, and I'm just like, man, I paid for this ticket. I'm trying to support you. I'm trying to make a good impression, and this is how you both do me. You both just do me dirty right now. And so the whole car ride home, I'm just mad. She's like, oh, you want to stop somewhere and get some weed? No, I don't want to stop somewhere and get some weed. You should have had Donald Glover get some weed. But yeah, that's my story, bro. Thanks.
You need to be glad she wound up in the car. I wondered if anybody gonna give us one of them stories where they talk about when they lost, because on Twitter, boy, you learn cats be losing. But yeah, I'm surprised. Well, what I want to know is, after she got, did Donald Glover get her number? Because I feel like he did.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he maybe only given us half the story there.
Yeah,
if we're only seeing the meeting of the eyes.
Yeah,
and that's all we're getting the description of. There may be something else.
He's giving us the half he knows.
Oh boy.
You know, three sides of every story.
All right, this last one comes from Jermaine in South Carolina.
Yo, Bomani, this is Jermaine from South Carolina. Yeah, a time a famous person tried to scoop my girl. So I'm in the Air Force. I used to be stationed down in Louisiana, and every year we have an air show. And a lot of years they would call or have special guests come in. And this one particular year, she worked in public affairs, so she dealt with all the famous people that would come to base. And Karl Malone was scheduled to come to base, and she told me, oh, Karl Malone's coming to base. And I said, oh, okay. I wasn't going to go to the air show because there's a lot of traffic, that kind of thing, and they try to force you to volunteer. But I said, you know what, I make a special trip because, I mean, I never necessarily had anything against Karl Malone. Plus, I mean, he's a Dream Team member. So I was like, man, I can at least get an autograph or something. So I come on base, meet the man, shake his hand. I mean, he's huge. He's still in great shape, that kind of thing. This is about 12 years ago now, but I go get an autograph. He's real nice, everything like that. And I tell my wife, I was like, well, hit me up later whenever it's over. I'm going to head home. And she calls me back about a couple hours later and is like, yeah, so Karl Malone tried to get me. And I said, what you mean get exactly? And she's like, yeah, after you left or whatever, there were a lot of strategically placed hands, during some of the rides across base. They did a little, like a demonstration of flying, I guess, and they had him up in the helicopter, very touchy-feely, and straight up asking her, yeah, what are you doing tonight, blah, blah, blah. And ever since then, I understood exactly why people like Kobe don't mess with Karl Malone. Yeah, I've hated that man ever since then. I'm not even with that girl anymore. Like, that's my ex-wife now. But just for a dude to know that the husband came up there to get the autograph, you're going to be nice to him, everything like that. And when he leaves, you try to do something like that? Nah, bruh. I had a package for the mailman. It was about to explode on him. But love the show. Appreciate all the free content and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, 5-star to you, man. Ain't no haters out here.
Wow. I don't have anything really to say. I do ask, Gabe, did we have anybody who told the truth about the time they lost? Like, you pick all these stories about guys talking about my wife. You ain't none of the losers called?
Nope.
Really?
This is a safe space, too.
Nah, but that's disappointing, because I've asked this on Twitter. Cats have great stories about losing. All these cats. Well, I will give it to the dude in the middle. He lost.
Yeah.
He short-term won, but he lost.
Well, the thing about the last one, too, is that in saying that he's no longer with this woman, he could be alluding to the fact that something did happen.
Nah, I think that story had a different message, which is simply Karl Malone is the worst. I'm surprised he didn't hate Karl Malone before, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know a single Karl Malone stan, not a one. I know a lot of people that hate Karl Malone.
When I saw that this one was about Karl Malone, I was like, oh, we got to get this one in the show.
Yeah, Karl Malone. I was. He was right on time with his problems.
Yeah, I mean, him alluding to the Karl Malone and Kobe story, that one.
Yeah, that was very similar. It's a similar situation. But all right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. I want to say thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Stamps.com. Thanks to ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to folks participating. And if you haven't heard, thanks to Anthony Cuthbertson of The Independent in England. Check out his story about biohacking and people getting microchips put under their skin. Thanks to Paresh Devay of Reuters. Check out his story about Apple and Samsung being fined in Italy for how the operating system make you have to get a new phone. Check that out on Reuters.com. And thanks to Amanda Coletta. Check out her story in the Washington Post about what's happening in Canada now that they have legalized cannabis. Remember to subscribe to The Right Time. Subscribe at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be there. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.